welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality, science, some elements of physics specifically, and just in general, some ideas about what the good life would be. Now, it's a kind of interesting subject, the good life, good coming from the word God, and it means a different thing to each being in its own life. That's going to be the first place we start. I'm going to define this from the beginning of what we call life for each incarnation or each new personality of a human being. However, the beginning of life is not here in the physical world. So we're going to really start from the perspective of each of our individual souls. And speaking from the soul's perspective is a much more meaningful way to understand what I mean by the good life. And I think by the end of tonight's show, this whole three-word subject will have a very different meaning to many listeners. Some maybe not. Some who have heard other shows, thought deeply about this situation, may have already some idea of what this show is about. I like subjects, titles at least, the subjects, that kind of get people thinking and don't necessarily reveal really what we're going to be talking about unless you have a pretty good understanding of things. All right, so let's begin, as we usually do, with the more conceptual, more, we'll call it, I could call it definitive elements, so that we have a common denominator in what I'm going to be saying so other people who are listening can then say, oh, I know what he means by that now since he defined that before. So I like to do that because then it's just so much easier to get into the examples without people getting confused or saying, well, what do you mean by that? You know? So hopefully in the next 40 minutes you'll have a pretty good understanding of what I'm meaning by some of the things that I'm going to use to explain tonight's show. Okay, so first of all, what is a human soul? A human soul is relatively unique among souls for other kinds of living things below or less than the consciousness of human. Those souls we call group souls. What does a group soul mean? A group soul focuses its attention along one way of expressing itself in terms of energy and in terms of, we'll call it, activity with other forms of life. Only one way at a time. And that one way is one of seven, as defined in metaphysics as sometimes referred to as a ray expression. Sometimes we call it even a ray line of expression. Okay, but that's not important to know, but it is helpful for people who have read some of this stuff and say, oh, what is that? Oh, no, I got it. It's a ray line. Oh, I got that. I remember that. Okay, good. But the most important part is that it's only one way to express for not one member of a species or a subspecies or a family. Those are sizes of groups of kinds of life forms. It's not just one for each member, but for the entire group. The group could be relatively small if it's like a sub species getting down to a very, very small level, but still could be in the hundreds to many thousands of individual life forms. Now, that's a group soul. And the way a group soul looks at a good life is where the species itself improves the life not just of its subspecies or the group that it's in charge of, but improves the way that group helps the life of all other groups that it interrelates with. So you could say it's kind of like, on a soul level, it's kind of like a good evolutionary kind of participant. And you might say, well, I thought that you believe in God and evolution is really, you know, survival of the fittest, and it's based upon some kind of purely energy level. No, it's not true. God uses this as a means, especially among group souls, for life to grow. So do not think that evolution is some kind of throwaway thing, because in the human soul, evolution becomes backseat to something else. But for the rest of these group souls below the human consciousness, evolution is a major part of its existence. And it uses the evolutionary model to improve its own species in many different ways. But it goes beyond the evolutionary model at times, which is hidden to us. Regardless, evolution is still a major part of the whole system. Do not ignore it. At the same time, be aware where it ends, which is mostly when you reach the human kingdom. Humans are affected by evolution to very small levels in comparison to life below the consciousness of humans. All right, so we have these group souls, but they're very limited in their creative expression because they use only one type of energy as the model that they predominantly express in terms of intelligent activity, or to improve activity towards more intelligence. That's their model. There's nothing wrong with that, because that's the way the system is designed. When you get to a human soul, human souls use all seven of the ray means to express themselves, with the dominant ray, because there's a dominant ray now among human souls in comparison to, we'll say, the souls that don't have a dominant ray. Their only ray is the dominant ray. Okay, so we'll call it the dominant ray. But in humans, it uses all seven, and it can use them sometimes equally in its creation, but it has a way of advancing itself which is along one ray line, and that is called the fourth ray line. And not maybe too confusing, the human kingdom is the fourth kingdom. Now you say, well, where's the fourth? You got to start with the mineral kingdom. I realize a lot of people don't think that's life, but it's called pre-life. And then there is sort of in-between kingdoms, which you have to do with things that are more likely to live off of the two kingdoms that they're between. We sometimes refer to them as like bacteria. They're big, big. And we also know about viruses and fungi and other kinds of things that are between. But for us right now, the most important thing is we have the mineral, and we jump to the plant, and that's obviously alive. Some people don't believe plants are sentient, but they are. And then you move to the animal kingdom, which is an animated form, or able to move by its own sentiency and consciousness. So that's now the animal kingdom. And its dominant factor is its ability to move based upon sentiency and consciousness. And finally, we get to the fourth kingdom, which is the human kingdom, and the human soul has all seven ways to express itself at the same time. It advances itself onto the next kingdom of life, which is called superhuman, or sometimes kingdom of souls. That's why we're talking about it right now. Yeah, kingdom of souls. And that's where the human soul is aiming for, by creating humans as a subpart of its life development. Subpart. And it uses all seven of its ray focus is to develop more intelligent interaction and activity with other forms of life. But it also chooses and helps to create a personality. Now, the personality has a specific ray, similar to the way an animal is, that it tends to develop its energy focus along the most. So, in many ways, the personality is a split. It is sort of part of being human, but in many ways resembles an animal, and seldom grows in terms of consciousness much beyond the age of what we consider to be the human consciousness at age 10. Whoa. It can become much more intelligent than that, but in terms of its overall level of consciousness, it doesn't get much beyond 10. That doesn't sound too good, maybe, but to balance this whole system out, humans also have a lower, and eventually most people have a higher self, and these selves can access the other six additional ways of being creative in intelligent interactions, or even unintelligent interactions, but in some form of interaction. So they can express themselves much more liberally, creatively, able to far and wide be more creative and move closer to being an expression of their soul. Well, that makes sense. So the soul is faced with the choice of how to best serve this new personality and eventually self or the conscious part of us. And the personality is subconscious. It is not conscious. And we're not conscious of it, usually. It is conscious somewhat of the self, but the self is not conscious of the personality in most people. So we call that our subconscious. If you're familiar with Freudian psychology, that would be like the id part, subconscious part. But still, in metaphysics, referred to as personality. Okay. Now, so the soul is attempting to develop a personality and self arrangement that will advance the most, we'll call it, development of the soul itself, but the soul has a very special viewpoint. From the human's perspective, the personality, it tends to be selfish, meaning that it uses itself to only benefit the personality. And from the soul side, the higher self, which is trying to bring this lower self into more alignment with the soul itself, is there to serve other souls, or serve other humans, but as their soul. And sometimes even serve other souls that aren't even human. But nonetheless, it's for service, spiritual service. And it's to be for the basis of others becoming more and more like their soul. So this is the struggle that the soul is, human soul is facing. It gets a lot of advice from energy being called the solar angel, who's an expert at how to use the seven rays of energy. And the human soul is not really an expert in this. It's like a novice. But it's gaining a lot of information in each lifetime, and the solar angel helps in that respect. It also gains a lot of help from other souls like itself. So to each soul, they look to incarnating in hundreds by numbers or more. The more complicated the person is, the more advanced the person is by having had successful good lives in prior lifetimes, the more souls are interactive together with that individual. So the first principle I'm trying to bring into play here is the good life is based upon how many lifetimes someone has served successfully in, which causes their life to be more expansive and have more interaction, intelligent activity, with other souls incarnates in the same life. We can tell a lot about how advanced a soul and an individual personality and itself is in comparison by how many people that personality is having a beneficial or intelligent activity effect upon. Not someone who's a mass murderer and evil. You can't say, well, oh, wow, that person's really advanced. No, because by definition of what I just gave, the activity is unintelligent, even destructive to life, and therefore is not a definitive factor as I'm defining things at the present time. So amount tells you a lot. Someone that has interactions in the hundreds to thousands of others in their same life, be it like I'm doing maybe over the radio or some other means of teaching or doing other things, versus someone who is maybe having more direct physical or sometimes other kinds of contact with people. It doesn't matter as long as it is helping to serve people as souls, helping them to become better servers to others. That's the definition of that, serving as a soul. So you can see the numerical value here is a very valuable instrument. I don't know that most people know that or even knew that, even if they have listened to me before, because I've defined it this way only once or twice over the radio. Some of that was a long time ago, and if you haven't listened to me in a while, if you have never listened to me a long time ago, it would be probably difficult for you to remember that. Okay, so this is an important agent to getting to the good life that I'm going to be further describing, is how wide is a person's intelligent activity with others to help bring about the development of a greater soul? How much are all of the different creative ways that the rays can be used? Now, this is a new definition. The rays can be used, not just the number of people, but the ways that you create with others is the next definition for the developmental assay of a person's overall, we'll say, consciousness and the way the soul is in complexity working with other souls. Someone working in more complexity is going to be using more of the different rays at the same time and in ways that may challenge the conventional ways that people use their energies and intelligence and in unique and far beyond normal ways. This is usually misunderstood, by the way, by people with lower consciousness. They may even rebel against it. Sometimes they become destructive to it, especially if they're touched in any way by evil. So you see, this is a very interesting process because the complexity of the good life is based upon the capability of the soul and its incarnate to develop intelligence and activity while physically and then astrally and finally lower mentally alone. Most of the focus is on physical life because that's the big banana right there. But the other two lives are not completely ignored. So it's a most fascinating means that the soul is faced with. It gets very complex and difficult as people develop themselves through, we'll say, many, many hundreds of lifetimes and become greater in consciousness, better as living more as a soul while they are in the lower realms. And it becomes also something that it will say pushes the ball forward, or maybe we'll say the needle ahead or whatever, the measuring of the gauges of showing where that soul is going and how far along it is. The good life changes during these different stages that the soul goes through. A new soul has a good life if a single individual personality, an incarnate, maybe develops 5-10% of intelligent activity along just one of the ray focuses it could out of seven. That may be a good life to someone in their first 50 lifetimes. And not be speaking in a negative way about that particular life. That's a good life. But the same life applied to someone at 650 lifetimes would not be a good life for that soul. And eventually, it would be a very, we'll call it negative life for that personality. So you can see that there's a lot of relativism here. And when we deal with this level of relativism, it starts to open our minds to not be so, we'll say, closed-minded, egotistical, and especially arrogant. It allows us to become more detached from the individual outcomes of a specific life and more to the overall trend and development and co-development with other souls. And so it starts to become something that is much better of, we'll say, of means of evaluation and measure. Better because it's closer to reality and the truth. Most religions misunderstand these concepts. Why is that? Well, because they tend to want to not have an open-minded system in which God and its life and creation and growth is free to create more and to become greater. This gets to the point of determinism. Most religions are deterministic. And determinism destroys the good life. It gets rid of the possibility of growth of life through the model that I'm presenting today. Also, things like extreme forms of socialism, communism, anything that expresses itself as a destroyer of freedom in order for there to be quote-unquote equal distribution and equality, which means the sameness between one being and the next, destroys the concept that I'm describing to you God created to grow human beings through their souls. It's actually anti-God and anti-souls if you believe in anything dealing with ancient wisdom. And the reason is quite clear, that if you apply only the second ray, the second part of God's mind, and the second part of spirit itself, to adjudicating what is right and wrong about intelligent activity, then you fail to include creativity in the process, which is the main source of changing the second ray into light. You need both rays, but the dominant part of it is always the first ray, creativity. And I write this, if you look in Lights and Meaning, in Chapter 3, a lot of people get confused by that. So I said it a number of times so that people would understand it, but not necessarily they do. So you have to have this more dominance, the first part of light, for the creative side, because it's the first part of God's thought. If it is lacking, you can never get to an enlightened state. You move towards darkness. And it becomes destructive, eventually, to enlightenment. This is the problem that we have, humans have, in failing to recognize the need, not for a balance, but actually for a slight, but not too slight, we'll say, greater importance given to creation and creativity than to equality and oneness. individuality is first, and we'll call it soul nature oneness becomes second, but the two have to be joined together, or you can't get to light. And so the soul is constantly, and I will say, the human soul is constantly faced with this challenge that each personal lifetime needs to have within it a semblance of creativity greater and individuality greater than the desire and need and expression of oneness and, we'll call it, total equality between oneself and others. This becomes radically difficult for personalities to interpret. And the radicalness of the difficulty comes into play because the personality prefers the model of the second ray approach than the first, because the first is makes it incumbent on the personality in its responsibility to equal its capability in creation. It has to express its capability in terms of creation before it can become one with others in some group fashion. If it doesn't do that, it becomes selfish, demeaning, lazy, argumentative, militaristic, and even deadly, and sometimes worse than anything, evil. So this is the problem the soul faces, the individual human soul faces, in trying to find the right construction of a personality that will not fail to recognize its responsibility is to reach its level of capability in its daily life, much less its whole life. No small accomplishment. And what the human soul does, I'm giving you some general numbers here, is like during the first few dozen lifetimes that it has incarnations, it settles for a few percent in that lifetime of time spent by the personality reaching its level of capability in its responsibility. Now remember, its capability is much lower than that of someone with hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes, and yet, it not only is its capability lower, but the chances that it will reach that capability by being responsible is almost equally lower. So you don't have as much success, even though it's such a limited, we'll call it, watermark that they have to get to. It's low. You don't have to get very high, and yet they still don't get very high. Many more failures than successes in reaching responsibility to match the capability of intelligent activity with others. Now you can say, well, wow, this is a lot more deep than you. I thought the good life was going to be some kind of movie, you know, we're going to have somebody from, you know, some place in an imaginary place talking about the good life, you know, James Stewart or something, doing a kick with it. No, I know. There's great parts of that movie, though. You know, it's a wonderful life. But the point is that it even shows elements of what I'm talking about, by the way. The very same elements are in that movie. Why is that movie almost played every year, immortally? It keeps going on. Because it has some truth in it. Yeah, there is some angel's wisdom right there. But the good life, as I'm defining it, is much more fascinating from the perspective of the relative changes from younger souls with younger incarnates compared to probably a lot of the people who are listening to the show tonight who may have been around hundreds and hundreds of times in our incarnation. I want to remind everybody the reason we don't remember prior lifetimes, at least while we're physically alive for sure, is because you have to create 60% of, this is an approximation, of connectivity of virtue or light in form to be able to remember. Now, how do we know this? Well, there was guys in the 1950s who came up with models for memory, and then later was expressed in research in the 60s and 70s, in which was discovered that, and this is in psychology and psychiatry and neuropsychology, it was discovered that if someone couldn't have 60% of the events connected together, they couldn't remember something. And if it was like 50%, they were a pre-memory condition. But if it was 70%, they almost always remembered. And so somebody said, well, it's about 60%. You got to have 60% of the events connected. If you disconnect the events because the light in form in the brain and other places, in the mind itself, which is different from the brain, is not connecting, you don't remember. And that's what happens from one lifetime to the next. How come children remember? Because children take with them, through their, we'll call it innocence, during the first 7 years particularly, a tendency, especially during the first 4 or 5 years of the 7 years, a tendency to act more, we'll say, virtuously in comparison to their capabilities. Their capabilities are very, very limited, and yet they are more virtuous in comparison to their capabilities than when they're later in life. They actually become more selfish. And during that period of time, if you're going to remember something, that's your best shot right there. About 50% of all children have some pre-life, prior life memories up to about the age of 5 or 6. You didn't know that? I do. I practice as a psychotherapist for many, many years. I can tell you, they do. It shocked the heck out of me. I couldn't figure it out until I started to get into the metaphysical side of things. But this is the point. You're not going to remember unless you're creating a lot of virtue up to your level or close to your level of capability. Then you're being spiritually responsible, and yes, you will start having some pre-life, prior life memories. No matter how old you are, age is not the deadly factor. All right, so looking at it from the perspective of the soul, it is faced with this amazing dilemma. What kind of personality is the best? And it has a other factor it has to include. It is going to incarnate with many other souls, incarnations, sometimes hundreds up to thousands. And when it does so, it's facing a thing called negative karma. It has some positive karma too, but it's facing negative karma. And some of this negative karma forces the soul to deal with some of the prior energy which is going to come together during that lifetime. It's just a matter of, it can't be stopped. It's going to happen. Some of this can actually be figured out, believe it or not, through astrology, but a certain kind of astrology that most astrologers don't practice. But if you use this other kind of astrology, which is more, we'll call it metaphysical and spiritual, you actually can see in a person's chart some of the karma that's there. And the soul can do the same thing from its own perspective. It doesn't usually think in the same kind of concepts that most astrologers use, but it's okay. There's not that much difference. In the short term, it allows the development of a personality that the known foibles are going to be right there because they're in the spiritual genes of that personality and in some of the physical genes of both parents. So it's really an interesting intermingling that takes place that allows the soul to sculpture, so to speak, a personality with the required, necessary amount of karma, and negative karma in some respects. And if the personality does not function, now this is very important to deal with, does that function soon enough to reach its capabilities in spiritually expressing itself to create more intelligent activity with the other souls' personalities that they have created, then negative karma will happen and the personality will struggle and have severe problems. Wow. If, no matter what the negative karma is the soul is facing, unless it is in one of its last lifetimes and then it takes on the karma of others, oh my God, sometimes the karma of the world, But it, nonetheless, if it's in some of the last life events, that's a different story. But if it's not in that, it actually is capable of getting ahead of the curve and creating enough intelligent interactions with others that helps them to do the same with others, becoming a really spiritual, enlightened being, because it's reaching its level of capability. Now, remember, this could be very a major difference between one set of lifetimes compared to a much later ones. But still, if it's doing that, it doesn't experience the karma, as karma is negative forces against itself. Experiences them as opportunities to create and to co-serve with others. Co-service being the second ray, creation being the first ray, brings them together and it enlightens itself from all this quote-unquote negative things in the horoscope. Wow. That's the system. That's how it works. And the souls are faced with this, we'll call it almost impossible equation, to put it all together and come up with the right balance among themselves, because they don't look at it just as an individual process. That's certainly involved, but also it has to serve the other souls that it's good, that are going to interact with each other because of the regions they will be in, because no matter where they are on Earth, they will find each other, they will interact with each other, because the energy around them, as either forces or opportunities, will lead them to that. Remember, it's one way or the other, energy or forces. Opportunities or forces, one or the other, will lead them to this. This is a fascinating, fascinating way. The good life always involves a greater proportion of opportunities being met and created and used and interrelated with others in comparison to forces. How did I do with that? Yep, almost 39 minutes and I'm right there. Right there. You got it. See, so the good life, I've been finding the good life now. The good life is the opportunity. The opportunity to be creative and match that with others so that you're enlightening yourself and others in comparison to living a life of forces. That's the good life. Now, I'm going to tell you, sometimes there is the antithesis of the good life for certain special people. They're the rare birds. And they still can have a good life, and that equation doesn't fit any longer, because they sacrifice even that element of the good life in order to serve beyond interaction just with others, other souls. They choose to interact, we'll say, with a greater thing, which we'll come back and talk about, give or take, in about 2.5 minutes. So thinking about this from this standpoint, the good life now has a definition. I hope you can see it, and when we come back, we'll talk a lot more about it. And if you missed this whole section of the show, when I come back and talk about the good life, guess what? You're not going to know what I'm talking about. That's right. Okay, so you go back and listen to it another time. We'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we are talking about the good life, and it has many, almost infinite meanings, depending upon which life we are talking about. I'm discussing it from the vantage point of the human soul, and the great level of difficulties that this soul has to help create and then help that personality through co-creation with other souls' creations of personalities to develop a good life. A good life, I just defined before the break, as a life in which a person is really more often than not co-creating with others while it is creating individually a, we'll say, more enlightened approach to something, whatever it might be, usually focused on one particular ray line or another, on one particular ray or another, as an expression. And allowing that development to, we'll say, reach its own level, the human's level, of capability. So it has to respond at its capable level. There are few people that follow a different creed. These people say, responding to my maximum level of capability, which is called nobility, or the noble path, if you're into Buddhism, that is a great thing. It's called the greatest of human virtues. But some virtues go beyond human. And for some humans that are more advanced, they're usually humans past about the middle of the third initiation, if you understand what that means. And many times they're fourth level, or arhat, fourth level initiates. These are humans coming pretty close to the end of all their incarnations, within a few incarnations to the end. And if they're arhat, almost within two lives of finishing being a human being. What does that mean? They choose, instead of reaching their level of capability, to create beyond their level of capability, meaning they have to create their capabilities to higher and higher levels with each new creation. Each new creation, if they're following this to the maximum level. That is very hard to do. Usually you find third level initiates doing it occasionally, and fourth-level initiates doing it almost always. In each case, because the levels are so enormously difficult, they bring about forces, even though they should, without, under normal circumstances with other humans, just bring about opportunities. The reason they bring about forces is because the human that is doing this is doing it for the purpose of saving others and helping others to be greater than themselves, and that means that they are taking on the responsibility of usually what are called students, which, and sometimes much more than that, sometimes whole nations and even the world. And when they take on this kind of responsibility, they invariably can be destroyed themselves by not being able to be at that capable at that level of response. It's not human anymore. It's way beyond human, and they're still partly human. So the chances are, at some point they're going to fail, and it usually ends their life. They're completely aware of this if they are at the levels I'm talking about. So don't think that, oh God, they're going to kill themselves and they don't even know that's what they're doing. No, no, no. Anyone into this group, this rare air group of beings, they are fully aware of what they're doing. And they fully take on that responsibility of potentially not meeting the superior levels of capability they need to create in themselves, and it may end up killing them. It's okay. Now, you could say, well, if they're taking it on for other people, which includes their students, why are they punished by these terrible forces that may destroy them or kill them? But it's their students that are doing it. Well, to their mind, they are responsible for everything. If they interrelate with anyone under any basis, they are responsible for that individual. This is not the general good life. The general good life says that on an individual level, you're responsible for yourself, individually. On a group level, you're responsible for others. The two have to be joined together, in which the individual continues to thrive at a level slightly greater, actually, than even the group side. But the two together create enlightenment. That's the normal method. That's the good life. But there are rare exceptions, as I've said, where someone by their own choosing now, someone else forcing them to, says, I will only move ahead when those that I teach and those that I lead and those that I serve and those that I help in any way move ahead as well, and they must be brought up to the same proportionate level of capability that I must in order to create so much greater light in the world. Wow. Well, that's a whole other yardstick. One which is called superhuman or sometimes soul level, and it's part of the next kingdom called the kingdom of souls, part of what is sometimes referred to as the lower part of the spiritual hierarchy. And it's all beyond human. You can't do it if you're just plain and simple, only a human. Then nobility is your highest level, just as the Buddhists teach. And that is a great path for most people, is the path of nobility. Do the best you're capable of. You don't have to keep advancing your capability every second or two or something. You just have to stay up with your level of capability. If you do the very best you can at your level of capability, you are a noble being. And that is still very, very good. Up to about the middle or so of the third initiation is considered exceptional. Really. Now, if you're a member of a more advanced spiritual group, you could be at that level even though you're a second level initiate. You may have to function a whole level higher. Maybe in the middle of the second initiation, go all the way to the third, because the whole group is functioning that way. And you would have a teacher and maybe a leader, the different people, but doing something similar to that, and it's a whole thing. But those are the rare, rare, rare circumstances. The good life for most people is plain and simple nobility. It's like the, you know, being noble, oh, wow, that's a great thing. So we could say for 99.9% or more, 99% of us, the life of nobility is a tremendously good life for the souls that have created those humans. Wow, it's a great life. And so this is really, if everybody on Earth were noble, this would be an enlightened world, and it would be something called sacred, and evil would not be here. We'd have a totally different planet. You know, unfortunately, nobility is rare. But still, it's something to think about, because it is, if you're not living a noble life, and most people aren't, you can at least see that. That's something you can strive for. You can say, this is the life that we could be noble if I chose to. If I read this Niles McFlowers book or some other thing like that and follow some of the ideas in it, I could become a noble being. There's a book called Challenge for Discipleship, written by Torquem Seredarian. Good book. I mean, it really tells you how to live a noble life. It doesn't exactly do it in a conceptual framework. You might still want to read Life's Meaning if you've read that book, but still, it gives some good ideas. There's many, many other books out there that have similar ideas. And there's books in Tibetan Buddhism that are like that. Zen, not so much so. But Tibetan Buddhism, yes. Zen is a more intellectually, purely mental processing issue, whereas it's not as balanced with the other two bodies. And I like the balance because it gets us closer to the good life. All right, so when we put on the more practical side of all this, and there is a very practical side to what I'm teaching tonight, we came here to create a good life. Every human being that is connected to a human soul came here to create a good life. Now, there's a few, I mean, a really small number, of people that aren't connected to their soul, human soul, any longer. They're evil. All right, they're too small a number to really be concerned about, except they do a lot of terrible things, but I'm not going to really get into that tonight. Let's talk about almost everybody else and see what kind of practical solutions there are to achieving a good life in various circumstances that the souls usually find are going to be the areas where we can either find opportunities to be of spiritual service and co-service of our soul, or develop a lot of forces. The good life is the opportunities being met at our level of capability, producing wondrous enlightenment and good results. A lack of forces will be found, except in those rare people who are serving at an even higher level. So here, when you look at this is an amazing formula, because now we can start saying, well, what are the practical values? Well, it depends where you're at. So I'm going to give you some general broad categories, because they're broad only from the standpoint they're in terms of capabilities. And that will help people to maybe use it as a little bit of a yardstick. I don't want you to take it too literally, because this is to learn the concepts of, not to say, oh, well, he told me if you did this and no, then you're at that level. No. That's not the intention of tonight's show. As a matter of fact, it's never my intention to do that. So many people take so many things I say in such unbelievably literal form. The problem with literal form is they're using the lower mind to define things that are really in the higher mind and even beyond the higher mental mind into the Buddhic realm, and that there's a thing called heuristic structures that I tend to think in and talk in, that other people convert to lower mental thought forms and then only apply what is called logic to. Some of the things I may say may not be truly logical, but they are true. So it's a weird thing. And that is the problem. So we're going to have some of that tonight, because I'm going to give examples that if you completely say, well, you said, then we're going to have a problem. But you'll figure it out. And sometimes I get frustrated when people bring back those arguments to me, because I know they're not able to think beyond a certain, we'll call it, restrictive level of mental thought. All right, so here we go. Let's talk about this. What is the most, we'll say, salient issue for people who are relatively what they're called young souls, people who have maybe less than 30, 40, maximum 50 lifetimes under their belt. These people have, as a hallmark, a usually better chance of living to their capability because their capability is so much lower. And that's not a bad thing. I don't just say, oh, low capability. Well, remember, they've only been here maybe 30 lifetimes. It's not that much for a soul. Most people live 20 to 30 times more than that, in that range, at least 20 to 25 times more than that. And, you know, it's not really a good way to evaluate someone in terms of whether they're good or bad to just say, well, they've only, it's like comparing someone who's maybe 8 years old to someone who's 80 years old. You wouldn't do that, would you? Would you say, well, the 8-year-old was unable to do this, but the 80-year-old could? Come on. We know better. Capability. So the first thing that we usually measure is how well developed the soul is. Now, the soul develops itself by unfolding certain, we'll call it, energies within itself that contact parts of conceptual thought. And as it unfolds these energies that touch conceptual thought, it's able to convert those energies into the development of a personality that can then use those energies in the physical, astral, and lower mental worlds. These energies are sometimes referred to as lotus petals in Buddhism. What the heck is a lotus petal? Well, it has usually three different expressions of energy in each of one of three levels of conceptual thought. It gets a little complicated. Yeah. If you want to know more about it, yeah, sure. There's designs that you can look at it in Lights and Meaning, Chapter 6. There's a lot of it in there, a little bit Chapter 7 or some more in Chapter 7. And then throughout the book, there's more explanations for it. But the point is that this is the model. We live in a physical universe. And so energy is the third part of God's mind that has to be used to create the forms that life grows in. If you don't include it, there won't be any life below the monadic plane. Well, that ain't going to be any fun. Okay, so the ultimate, of course, I mean that somewhat facetiously. It's not going to be much meaning in existence to have formless existence as monads with them. Okay, so form is really, we'll call it the main part of life below the monadic. And it becomes much, much more relevant as you become more dense. But that means there's more energy present in the life form. Here in the physical world, that's really big. We have huge amounts of energy. All right. So we're trying to replicate these energies that the soul is in contact with. Concepts, which is the first and second parts of God's mind, we call it spiritual thinking, that are in the higher mental world, and especially those that are in the spiritual part of the conceptual mind. It's actually a part of the conceptual mind that doesn't have spiritual concepts because they're not whole enough there. And so that part is the part that the personality is able to think in to a limited extent. These are called very limited concepts. They are ideologies in some cases, like democracy, communism. There's a ton of them. And then there are other kinds of thought that deal with concepts about material things, and concepts that are scientific, quote-unquote, truths. Those are not spiritual. But they are used far more by our younger souls. Yeah, because those are the petals that are get first undone that are in contact with those concepts. The soul doesn't have anything else to work with until it unfolds these energy fields which touch these higher concepts. when it doesn't have the concept, the solar angel, which is a big energy being that's really good at all contact it needs, can slip in a little energy into the concepts and make it kind of ring into the soul, which then can be sometimes even transmitted to an incarnate at the time. Or it can be done when the soul is not incarnation, in incarnation, but working with other souls to try to develop a plan. So it gets help. But strangely, that help is only transient. It's at the moment. It can't retain the help of the solar angel unless it unfolds the petal. So if it wants to be able to use it in its own discretion anytime it wants, and not constantly have to get it back and forth from the solar angel, it's going to have to unfold the petal, and there's nothing else it can do about it. So here we have this situation where the soul is, we'll say, encumbered by its own incapability itself, and it has to try to create a personality that is going to free up the self as much as possible of that person. So it can help the soul to start getting more access to these higher concepts than it has had in the previous lifetimes. The self and the higher self and the solar angel come together and help that to happen. It's a joining between the soul and the self of the person. Personality feels many times threatened by this, but sometimes it does allow it to take place. Sometimes there's a battle, the person having to fight for it. But regardless, this process is very important to develop any level of nobility. It is virtually required. You've got to be able to access the concepts beyond what is called the knowledge level of concepts. In the knowledge, lowest knowledge level of energy petal that the soul can connect to. And everybody's got the knowledge petal open that we're talking about. So if a soul's incarnate, it's got to have that, it's called K3 petal, open. But it doesn't help if it's the first 30 or so lifetimes, 40 maybe for some, and even less, 50, you're going to see those humans being very narrow-minded, having concepts that are not very spiritual. They may be very religious people, though, because one of their ideologies may be a specific religion. Maybe they're a very, 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 very strong Baptist, because they're 6-3, it's called, part of the K3 pedal, which tells them, this religion has got it really together. They like certain parts of the concepts of that religion. And they kind of become wed to it more or less for that lifetime, or a large part of it. And so it has a great effect on their capabilities. The capabilities actually become limited by the K3 pedal as much as they are developed. Still, if someone has those capabilities and they use them to, as I explained, become, we'll say, more adaptable, more creative of, we'll call it, new ways of thinking within that parameter, they actually still are considered to be living a good life. Because they're living at the capability they have at the moment, and they're trying to do it so by being as giving and loving, of course, consciousness, and creative within the limits of that particular narrow range of thought in that lifetime. So for the first 30 or 40 lifetimes, people aren't even thinking in spiritual thought, even though they may be religious, and could still have a noble life. I know, you're saying, what? I never knew that. No, I know, but I want you to know that very few people today have only lived 30 lifetimes. These are rare birds. by most people's standards. But I want to start at the lowest level so we can see the changes in definition. I want you to think about that. I'm going to just very quickly tell you a little bit of something that may be of interest to you. And the following, at any rate. If you haven't been to see anybody in recent times for your vision, you may want to see Dr. David Stacy over at the, the Eye Center. And when you get there, you may want to discuss with him ways that you can maybe see better. The reason I'm saying this is because some doctors charge an enormous amount of money for this, what this fellow does. I never told you this before, but there actually is a person that in his profession that deals only with, quote-unquote, highly difficult, very, very difficult eye problems. And they do so at a high level of expense. He's willing to deal with that with people at his normal fees. Now, that sounds strange. He is. And he was willing to work with you so that you can see better. So if you at all can try to get yourself over to the Eye Center, it's over in Chandler, around the Phoenix area, I would suggest trying him out and see if he can help you in some way to improve this. And you can go over to the eyecenter.com on the Internet, and you can get all the information. I'm not going to spend much more time on this today because I do think that for today's show, I just got to keep going. But nonetheless, I think you will find that there is some assistance to people who normally can't afford to get their vision corrected to the level that they'll be happy with. And he is an affordable option. That's the reason I give him these advertisements. You see? Okay, so we are now talking about how we move from a really young soul, the first 30 lifetimes or so. Some people are really, really hard to move ahead, and it may be 40 for them. But the point is, it's in that ballpark. Now, you move from that to, say, up to 100 lifetimes, and you're into a totally different realm. Somewhere between 30, 40 lifetimes, and then you move up to 80, 90, 100 lifetimes, the soul starts moving almost, we'll say, into a new realm for its own existence. The petals of the second tier, they're called, the petals of the spiritual mind start to develop. At the same time, there's beyond just the lowest part of the lower petals that are energy fields, the higher parts start to develop, and the person starts to recognize and understand the virtue of, we'll call it, limited group consciousness. They aren't truly soul conscious, but they've developed enough during the first 30, 40, 50 lifetimes where they have some degree of group consciousness, and that causes them to be individually capable of creating virtue with others on a personal level. They do so to be personally closer to others. And it could start from the very first lifetime, a little tiny bit. In each lifetime, they become more and more personally developed. They become more willing to give, to co-create, to help others co-create on a personal level together. This usually involves things like charity. It involves things like helping in your church or possibly in other expressions of creative group style, but individual personal interest realms of creating virtue. While that's going on, the second tier of petals, the part that really is touching onto the soul level of consciousness, starts to stimulate and open. So you get these folks up to about 100 lifetimes or so that are pretty well developed on a personal level of creating virtue. They're virtuous, personally. But on a soul level, they have a minimal level of soul development, of consciousness. And so they don't co-create, they don't create new forms of ways of co-serving with other souls, as souls. They give to others, but they give to others more often personally than they give to others to help them to become more giving to others. Now, there's many more people that fall into this category. And one of the problems is the dominance of this thought is overshadowed by the second ray in comparison to the first, because they're not thinking enough in the higher concepts of the second ray to mitigate the illusion about the issue. So the odd thing is they use it more, but with less consciousness or understanding of what they're doing with it. And that leads to levels of irresponsibility and sometimes failure. They're more prone, as an example, because this, the rest of tonight's show is on examples, they're more prone to give people their lunch and dinner and their clothes to wear and maybe a ride to and from work than to help those people to become servers to other people. You see, that difference is a huge difference, and it leads to a lot of illusions, particularly in the physical world. It leads to things we call, actually, socialism and communism, which is, leads to evil, unfortunately. But it also leads to the general principle that it's better to feel good about giving on a personal level than it is to help others to be more giving, which may not feel so good to the person who's doing the giving. So people start giving because it feels good. Actually, they start originally giving because they think other people will think that they're special and important. And then they eventually move on to that and they start giving to other people because it feels good. And then eventually they give to other people because they want to be right, and they think by giving to other people it helps them to look like they're more right to themselves and the other two things as well, that other people like them more and think better of them and also makes them feel better. But all these illusionary ways are based upon selfishness, and they are not the truth. But it's still part of this, what we'll call the third-tier organization of what many people call spiritual personal concepts. And up to about 100 lifetimes or so, this dominates most people's thought processes. If you're past about 100 to 125 lifetimes and you're still dominated by that, you are definitely not leading a good life. And your life becomes more and more filled with forces. If you go from 100 to 200 lifetimes, and you're still following that same misguided way of thinking, forces become almost imperative on a mass scale. And whole countries have been destroyed by this, when the majority of people in the country think this way. I mean, the United States is on its way to doing that, and most of Europe is already in it. So be aware that this comes in cycles, by the way. You have souls that are developed in certain cycles, and they move on, and they don't have these problems. But then you have other souls coming up the ranks, so to speak, and they fall into this during certain periods of development, and suddenly the world looks like an upside-down place over there right now. You have people in the second 100 of lifetimes acting like they're in the first 50 or the first 30 or for sure the first 100. That has some real negative consequences because it produces enormous forces in everybody's life. The forces usually come out in terms of things like food, shelter, and clothing, freedom to express yourself, freedom to be creative, and eventually imprisonment and slavery and tyranny. Not from the people who are like that, but from others who take advantage of it. So you end up with this amazing upside down to the soul outcome. Wow. Now let's move up from a little closer to 300 lifetimes. And the good life to someone with 300 lifetimes is that they are functioning about 1 or 2% of their lifetimes from the second tier, or from a spiritual soul's perspective, not from a spiritual personal perspective. They have much greater self-development, and they aren't disillusioned. That's a good thing. So people up around in the 300 lifetime range that are doing that sort of stuff, and this, again, these numbers, I want you to know, these are only examples. It could be wide differences. But people in that particular realm are starting to not more often than that, but a couple percent of the time, live their life as souls. It's not too bad for someone who's had 300 lifetimes. As a matter of fact, that's the good life. They're going to have lifetimes where they have less forces and more opportunity to be creative, more opportunity to create in a meaningful and soul way. However, someone who's 500 to 600 lifetimes is functioning as another person who's at 300 lifetimes is going to produce enormous forces in their life. You see the difference. Be aware of what I'm saying. People in the United States fall into the 300 lifetime range on an average. So don't think that we're not talking about a lot of people in this country. We are. Those who are still thinking personally at 300 lifetimes are going to produce disasters economically. I'm talking about on a national scale, a world scale, economically, and in every way imaginable, cyclically. You're going to have a lot of problems. Well, guess what? Yeah, they're down. I know. And they're going to elect people who reflect who they are. That's bad. That's called representative democracy, and that's what we do. But beware. You've got too many people doing too many forces. You have a whole country doing the forces, and then it's a real bad thing. Okay, so moving ahead. As you move past the 300 or so lifetimes into the 400 and 500 range, you're getting into a process in which the person is starting to spiritually discipline themselves on a conscious level. Their range of development moves from 1% to 2% in consciousness, that is spiritual, to, not personal now, because personal consciousness could be up in 15% conscious. I'm talking about spiritual consciousness. Remember, spiritual is where you're living through that second part of the soul's mind, where it is you're 1% or 2% of the time creating consciously with other souls to help them to become more. So it's a whole different kind of thought process. The personal consciousness can keep growing, but it doesn't do the soul that much good because the capability becomes less and less expressed in that lifetime. More and more forces are developed, and nobility becomes a distant idea. Okay? Hope you're following me. This is not easy to follow, so I'm trying to make it as simple as I possibly can, because we all want to get to the good life, right? All right, so we know that most people are in the 300s. But out of those most people in the 300s, in the United States, we have maybe a third or more, maybe the 40% of those folks but for sure a third, who are not living up to their capabilities, even close, and they're creating enormous forces in themselves and in the country. Wow, that's scary. And because we have a representative democracy, it's possible, it's a third of the population, that it's not that hard to elect people who are just like themselves. No. Because they only need another 17%, and they got the person elected they want to get elected. You see the difference. All right, so that's a scary thing. Remember that. Now, let's move on. So we get up to these higher realms now. These people become what are known as spiritual disciples. You get up to like 500 lifetimes. People are starting to use spiritual discipline to change themselves in that lifetime. Now they are starting to actively take control over the development of themselves beyond just the question of, oh, yeah, I'm going to 1% or 2% of the time be spiritual. These folks start reaching 8, 10, 12, 14, 20, that's a lot, percent of the time being their souls while they're physically alive, a bit more as their astral life, and even more when they're mentally alive. Beverly gets better as you move up. I'm referring everything to the physical world right now. I don't know if we'll have time to talk about the other worlds in the show tonight, because this is a little complicated, and I don't want to go too fast. We'll see how much time we have. All right, so this is good news. You know, you think, wow, spiritual disciples, excellent. How many of them are there? Oh, give or take, there are about 5 to 6 million people in the United States at this level. That sounds like a lot of numbers, a lot of people, right? 500 lifetimes. Oh, wow. But there's 310 million people, citizens in the United States. That, and maybe more than that, living here. And so you've got something going on here that's small. If you figure it out, it's at about, well, it's a couple percent of the population. That presents a real problem. Because these folks now, remember what they're doing, they're living much closer to their capability. They may not be living at their capability all the time, but about somewhere between 8 and probably 16-20% of the time, they are. Wow. What does that do to the souls that they come from? Well, those souls are just expanding those petals, I was saying, those energy petals, into higher and higher realms of spiritual thought, so the two are melding together and they're becoming much more creative of intelligent activity. Here in the physical world, for the incarnate, and for the soul itself in its own realm. It has to rely less on the solar angel and is able more to completely create from its own consciousness and thought. Wow, that's a very good thing. What about those that fail at those levels? What if you got, like, oh, I've been around 535 lifetimes, and this lifetime I think I'll skate. Forget about this spiritual discipline stuff. Maybe I was a spiritual disciple before, but you know what? I'm kind of lazy. I'm not really interested in it. It's too much trouble. You know, maybe producing problems for myself. I'll just forget. I'll hang it up for this lifetime. I'll wait till the next 4 or 5 or something. Maybe I'll actually wait till the astral life. You know, I heard it's a lot easier there. What happens? Well, remember, the ratio of capability to what you do in creation becomes the formula for the good life. You don't have a good life if you got a bad ratio. So what is a bad life for someone with 535 lifetimes and they decide to skate? A life of meaninglessness. The true bane, the true hell of existence. We think that suffering is the worst that can be in terms of life. but it's not. Unless you consider meaninglessness a form of suffering, because if you do, it's the most extreme form. And then you can see how this is an imprisonment of both the soul and the personality and the self, the lower self, with the higher self, all together in this being, kicking the can down the road for another life, or at least another part of life in a different dimension. How serious is this? Oh boy, is it serious. How many people of those 5 or 6 million people are doing this? I don't want to tell you. It's too many. Does it create enormous amounts of forces for them? Yes. But the forces are more hidden than you might think. It doesn't appear to the outside observer that the forces are any worse than someone who's laying in the gutter with no food and shelter, etc. But there is a greater force than that. The force is a sense of hollowness, a sense of disconnect from God, usually leading to agnostic or atheistic semi-viewpoints, if nothing else, with a distancing of the intellect from the sentiment of the person, so that people can think about God and talk about it and ontologically have arguments about it, but they don't feel at all connected to God, and they don't feel at all connected to life, and they feel a sense of detachment that can lead to suicide, either conscious or subconsciously done, or it can lead to a nihilistic viewpoint that is so tragic as to leave the person with literally, a non-existence. In other words, the sense is like being swallowed in darkness with nothing else to look forward to deal with. When that happens, the person becomes inundated with fears. Can become evil, or at least manipulated by evil, but is inundated by fears. Why do we become so afraid when we take on a life by our own creation or lack of creation that becomes meaningless? Because the fear is that if this is all there is, God could not exist. That's a huge fear. And in addition, we don't matter to anything. So even if God exists, our own existence is in peril and has no meaning. This is the true hell. Now you know why I wrote a textbook called Life's Hidden Meaning. Because the hidden meaning is what liberates those people who are in this condition. It gives these potential or maybe were spiritual disciples, some way out, a lifeline. But it still takes enormous will to overcome the lethargy, inertia, and just downright illusion selfishness that is instilled within these folks. I meet them every day. I'm sad for them and angry at them at the same time. I wish I could change them. The best I can do is rile them up here and there, usually by saying a few things that sometimes are not too kind to me. But most of the time, I'm just trying to be of service to them. The issues are so vast in this group that it's impossible to give just a few examples that will really tell the full scope of the problem. Because almost every person has a unique set of reasons for them putting themselves in this hellhole. What is the good life? The good life is to reach your capability at this level, 535 lifetimes, I'm just using it as an example, and to create vast amounts of new intelligent activities with so many others, where they become so co-creative that every time you look at them, they've grown and you can smile and say, joy! Joy because they are growing. It's a wondrous thing. Then you can also say, I am growing because I am 15, 20% of the time noble. That level of nobility doesn't sound like much, but believe me, people who are 10% nobility stand out. They glow to us. We look at them as being great. 20% is amazingly high. It's a big deal. Now, that's not on the personal level. We're on the soul level of consciousness. Personal people can reach 30, 40% levels of consciousness. Not much more than that, but that much. And they can be great chairmen of this company or that, whatever. And they still can have a meaningless life. They can still bring enormous forces into their life. Because they aren't serving the soul. And they aren't being noble. They aren't only using their capabilities that are personal from the K3 pedal. They use more and more of those and then less and less sometimes of more spiritual things. Wow. It's an interesting process. The good life. Now, in a good life, sometimes people sacrifice their personal capabilities to grow their more spiritual ones. When that takes place, there is no diminishment of the self. And the person becomes more enlightened. This is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. Wow. This is an important concept, but there's many others now. What happens when you get to the 600 level? Well, almost everyone that reaches 600 lifetimes has had some pieces of spiritual discipline. And at that point, they usually have chosen in some of the lifetimes from that point forward to be spiritually disciplining themselves during part of their physical and certainly their astral and mental lifetimes. These are good things. And they may tend to live their life more and more as what we call a spiritual disciple. In contact with others in a kind of spiritual group, it doesn't have to be what we call a spiritual group in the common vernacular. But as I define it, it is a spiritual group. Because each person is giving as a soul to others. Now, the most important element that we get to at this point is what happens when people fail here. Well, now it gets more specific. If you fail at the first level of initiation, you usually develop a lifetime in which you have about 10% of your life spent being two things. In a force, 10% of the time you're in force, and forceful issues arise. And 10% of the time, approximately, you have a meaningless sense and feeling and experience in life. But that's if you've tried and failed, not if you have tried and turned away. That's a whole other thing. All right, so now what happens if you're in the second level of initiation? It jumps up to about 25%. And the same conditions apply, so you have a totally different perspective. 10% is one part of your life. It's meaningless and has forces. 25% is pretty strong. One-fourth of the time, your life has forces in it. Whoa, that's a lot. One-fourth of your life is meaningless. That's a lot. That's a tough life. What happens if you do the good life? Well, if you do the good life, you're going to reach a level, what is known as joy almost to bliss, and you will experience a growth in your higher self, which is profound. Your creative levels will become enormous. You'll be creative in ways that are not just in the physical world, so to speak, create a better mousetrap, bicycle, maybe a better toaster. But instead, you'll create new ways for people to give to each other and new ways for you to be giving as a soul. Those are bigger things. You might still make some good toasters, too, but the toasters will be very loving toasters. Being a little facetious. Okay, so the good life here has a lot more tangible issues, especially during the physical world. Remember, I'm not in the astral or the mental at this point. In comparison to the good life for a first level initiate who is successful. When you get to the third level of initiation, a person who fails during this initiation, who's usually at the towards the beginning of it, has 50% forces in life. Whoa, that's bad news. And that's a life that almost is intolerable, by the way. And 50% of the time now, which it's almost hard to understand this, not only are there forces in the person's life, but there's meaninglessness. One half of every waking moment is meaningless. That level of meaninglessness is a nullification of the self, and it leaves the person very much open to evil. When you nullify the self, because 50% just about wipes out your memory, your ability to connect things together, you all kinds of things, you're easily duped by evil. So the people who are most likely to become evil are at the end of the second level initiation and into the beginning of the third initiation. They are the danger ones. Whoa, and it's particularly if there's a split disciple between those two, you can't be in an any more dangerous position for possession by evil. Because you're reaching this meaningless element, which is continually making you sorrow, experience great sorrow, and an almost impossible set of circumstances of great, great forces. Huge forces. If you're in a spiritual group, you bring those forces with you into that group. It's a terrible thing. Teachers of spiritual groups won't let people in those groups, usually, unless they are a very advanced spiritual teacher in a very advanced kind of group. They may let somebody in, but that's an unusual situation. Those are different things. We'll talk about them if we have time towards the end here. Okay, so this is an amazing thing. You say, well, can it get any worse? Actually not. The odd thing about it, when you get up to about 700-plus lifetimes, most people have gone through these terrible issues, and they may be nearing the middle of the third initiation. They may be nearing even the fourth initiation. In those situations of spiritual service, the things they're doing are so creative, they are creating beyond their capability. Some of the time, at least. Once they get into this new realm, they're creating as a soul in itself. They become a living soul here. It's as though half the time or more, they're actually living as a soul on a physical life. These folks are creating consciousness in a spiritual sense in the 30s, 40s, 50% or more than that. These are great beings. Now, we need to still realize that if you start creating beyond your capability, you're going to make huge, huge mistakes sometimes. And also, you're taking on the karma of others that are way beyond, or below, I should say, your level of consciousness. And you're taking responsibility for them, and they may just really screw up a lot. And cost you your life, in a physical sense or an astral. And so things can really become out of, we'll say, control. Out of the control of the person who's doing this, because they're really functioning as a soul, and souls don't really concern themselves much with control, whereas the personality does. So they've given up that issue because the personality has fused so much with their soul, it doesn't trouble them. Doesn't. They may be a little bit involved in the conflict between the two, though. I mean, the severity of the situation may be so great that they may fall sometimes from the grace of being solely focused in a sacrificial way out towards all others. And occasionally, whenever they fail in that respect because their own senses have declined because they have students and they're part of a group that's destructive or this or that, in those situations, they may actually be almost schizophrenic in a desire for control and not to control and back and forth. And it can produce some serious, serious problems. But this is the test. The test of moving to the next kingdom is to overcome every element of this kind of strange and radically not typical human experience. All right. So what's the good life for those who are beyond the 700? The good life for those beyond the 700 or maybe 725 or maybe 750, the magic number supposedly being 777, I don't know about that. But we'll call it 700 to 800 in that range. What is the good life for these folks? The good life for these folks becomes, most of the time, over half the time, being noble. But that's not good enough. They seek to grow their capabilities each step of the way beyond their present level to a new level, to have to meet in responsibility the new level in their creation and co-creation of intelligent activity here in the physical world, if that's what we're talking about right now. Whoa! Can they do that? Yes. Is it possible? Certainly. Are there failures at it during a lifetime? Sure. Because you're talking about living as a soul in the physical world. This is no easy job. The other thing is these folks are functioning from the very first here, the highest level of energy fields as the highest part of the higher mental world. That the soul now has extended itself to almost the point where it is reaching into the Buddhic realm on a conscious, regular basis. The amazing thing about this is these people become super people, superhumans, because they can think and do things that other people can't do. They think hundreds, thousands of times faster than normal human beings. Their level of intelligence is immeasurable. Their consciousness is amazing at times. Other times it seems like they're pitiful because they can fall apart from the destructive elements of those that they serve. Enough of this confusion and strangeness can reach a level of such high pitch that it can kill, in a physical sense, the human as a result. But still, they proceed on. They say, okay, death's no big deal. Right? Go on to the next body. I'd like to stay longer here, beak my soul here. But if I can't, I can't. I'll move on and keep creating beyond my capabilities. Pushing on the limits of what it means to be human in virtue into new forms of virtue that are more godly. You're literally becoming one with your creator at this point. Creator is way beyond noble. Nobility is mundanity to the creator. But to a human, it's a big deal. So, the good life now becomes a life of extreme creation. So far beyond human understanding of creation that most people, even who co-serve with these usually third and fourth level initiates, can't conceive of what it is they're doing. They may, be a, helpful, and they may want to serve, co-serve with them, but they can't really get the creation that they're doing. They see, we'll say, the superficial side of that creation, but not the full extent of what it is doing. They're lost, bewildered, even though they may be students. They may be co-servers in numerous ways, but they can't grasp the whole picture. It's just too big. And, of course, to the spiritual disciple in such a position, there's an inevitable disconnect, an inevitable sense of isolation, loneliness, and separation from these other souls it's trying to co-serve with, because those souls aren't fully souls here like they are. And so they miss a lot of the soul consciousness, which is the big picture of what the creations are about. And that also leads to a lack of understanding the identity of who the person is, because they're really a living soul, and people see almost none of it. They become invisible to people who aren't co-serving with them in some way. Invisible. They don't exist, because you only can see them through their creations, and only if you're co-creating with them. If you're not doing that, forget it. They're, for all intents and purposes, not there. But the good life to these folks isn't about people identifying with them, seeing them, or anything. The good life is the creation of God itself here on Earth, in the physical world, and later in the astral middle world. And it's an amazing thing to them that God can be created, even if it's not going to be for now. Sometimes most of what they do is for some time in the future. They are the true avant-garde. They are those that create so far ahead that most of the creation will not be recognized while they're physically alive, and maybe not even until they're back in incarnation in another lifetime sometime in the future. That's how it works. But the good life starts becoming connected to the astral and to the mental world. This is where the person takes on a new way of looking at their existence. It's not personal anymore. It's the soul's realm of expression, which is the physical, astral, and lower mental worlds, being creatively changed in step 1, 2, and 3, in each part of the bodies being used up for the purpose of more spiritual existence. Not for the person themselves, but for all those they co-serve with. And so, the life now extends way beyond the physical life. The person gets some solace from this fact that although here in the physical world, maybe no one even can see them or has much to do with them about any of the things they create, the astral will improve, and they know once they get to the lower mental, it will not be too bad. And when they get to the higher mental, they will really be an amazing soul who will be fully able to operate with the other souls that are at that similar level. And each will be creating more of themselves each step of the way in the creations they create. They don't create things that depend upon only their existing capabilities. They only create things, or mostly create things, that require creation more of their higher self, which is also more of God. If they can't create more or co-create more of God, creating more of themselves into God, that creation they leave for others to do. That's the good life. The good life now is the life of our Creator. Can you get to that life and be here in the physical world? Sure. Can you get there if you're at the 500 level? A little. Better through a group of others, maybe one or two who are in that group who are higher and beyond the level of just nobility. Be noble as much as possible, and you'll have the moments to share of joy, maybe not bliss, with those that are doing this at a more consistent level. You can reach that level of good life even here. That's an amazing thing. That's a wondrous, wondrous element to the process. Now, are there failures at past the level of the middle of the third initiation, sometimes called past the renunciation stage? And the whole life of an arhat is called the renunciation. You have to live the renunciations you commit yourself and test yourself on during the middle to the end of the third initiation. You have to live through it again, even as an arhat, in the earlier part of your life. But once you get to the arhat stage, the whole life is a renunciation. What are you renouncing? Renouncing actually anything that deals with the personal interest of sense or consciousness. So, and mostly anything you've done to, in illusion, to selfishly use that in any prior lifetime, including an existing one. But can you fail, so to speak, if you're beyond the third level of initiation, if you're not a split disciple? Well, you couldn't be anyway beyond that. But the point is, if you're at that level, you can't really, really fail per se, but you could less than create beyond your capability than you would like to. But that's because you're limited by the conditions at hand. Here on physical Earth, this is one of the most difficult planets to be alive on. And so the chances of failure, in a sense, for advanced initiates here is high. Because, after all, how many souls are you going to be able to save and co-create with and do all those other wonderful things with if the whole planet's going dark? Not too much. So the good life could not be the great life here for these folks, but they can't, they won't go back and function as they may have 100 lifetimes before, the way others can. That won't happen. Can they still suffer? Yes, they suffer from the going dark of a world through the absence of what would be God. And they do all they can to stop that and to prevent it. They'll fight evil forever if necessary. But the point is that their lives are a hallmark of the soul itself. And once you get to that level, you can't really fall back. That's why you can only become evil if you haven't gone past the middle of the third initiation or so. Can't become evil. So once you get past that, you're not going to become an evil person. You may have some bad times. You may have great sorrow in watching a world like Earth fail. But despite all that, the good life still comes from the fact that you're at least half the time noble, and more than that, amazingly creative, beyond all imagination. And the gifts of creation come in a mind that reaches the Buddhic world. And once you reach the Buddhic world, an entire new realization is at hand. The good life in the Buddhic world is an enlightenment of the soul to what is called liberation. What are you liberated from? You're liberated from the illusion that comes from separation of body and mind in three different ways, in three different worlds. Couldn't really cover all that tonight, but that's the definition of it. And you are liberated from that once you reach into Buddhic consciousness, and you can get there at will, and you can stay there for long periods of time. Then at least that part of meaninglessness is gone. It's a wondrous thing. And that good life can never be ended or taken away. Well, I hope this has made some sense to you tonight. There's much more I could have covered about the other dimensions, and it would have filled in a lot of things, but we don't have time for that right now. And until next week, I want you to consider what kind of life you want to create for yourself while you are here and then later on. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.